In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, I talk with five-time entrepreneur David Cancel about when to use freemium, why they stopped asking for a credit card before letting people try their SaaS app, and why so many first-time founders make the mistake of trying to invent rather than innovate. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 291. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob, and today with David Cancel, we're going to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So I'm very pleased to welcome David Cancel to the show. I know David from, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago. I stumbled upon this startup called Performable and was wondering who was behind this because these guys were really doing some interesting things. And David and I eventually met at a Business of Software conference. And Performable was later acquired by HubSpot. David became the VP of product for HubSpot and stuck around there for several years. And then most recently, within the last year, has launched another SaaS app called Drift. And Drift is in-app messaging and live chat aimed at mostly at SaaS apps. Is that right, David?
That's right.
It's intended to, I'm assuming, help people get onboarded and a lot of sales focus, right? It's to help have sales conversations right in your app.
Yeah, it's basically lets businesses and communicate with their prospects and customers.
Yeah, very cool. And when I went, I just briefly looked at a bio of yours because, you know, you and I have known each other for many years and kind of keep tabs on each other remotely and via podcasts and stuff. But I didn't realize you were a five-time entrepreneur. Were there three startups before Performable?
Oh, yeah. I was an OG by the time I did Performable.
Jeez. Wow. So when did you start launching stuff? Were they all SaaS or were there other apps that launched?
The first one wasn't. That was a long time ago. But after that, they all were SaaS. And really, my first SaaS startup was in 2000. It was called Compete. And we started out as SaaS. And then we kind of, I won't say pivoted, but we started to focus more on enterprise. And SaaS still became, we brought SaaS back like in 2006 before we got acquired. And most people know Compete because of Compete.com. But most of our business was through enterprise sales.
How interesting. I've heard that before, that you were the founder of that, and I didn't connect it for some reason. That's fascinating. And then what did you do after Compete?
After Compete, I did a project called Ghostery. And Ghostery, you know, was one of these kind of side projects that I didn't think was a business. Although, you know, in 6 months, I had like 3 million users using Ghostery, and I still didn't think it was a business, which sounds ridiculous now. Ghostery got acquired by a company in New York and who has now rebranded themselves as Ghostery. Ghostery kind of subsumed that company. There are about 150 people in New York and Salt Lake City.
Jeez.
And then I did a company called Lookery, which was kind of like a data network for ad servers. And kind of at the time that Facebook launched their platform. And so a lot of early customers like Zynga and a lot of other kind of gaming companies. And after that, I started Performable.
Got it. And so the reason I wanted to have you on the show is that a lot of our listeners hear Mike and I say week to week, we say these kind of rules of thumb. You might hear me say, if you're in doubt, don't use freemium because unless you really know what you're doing, it's like a samurai sword. If you really know what you're doing, you're an expert. If not, you can cut your own arm off, right? Or by default, if in doubt, ask for a credit card up front because you're going to have less support, especially if you're bootstrapping and you're a small team and you're going to be able to get the most qualified prospects through and blah, blah, blah. And there are several things that you're doing right now with Drift that they're counter to that advice, but you're a five-time successful entrepreneur. So you know what you're doing and you're able to kind of wield these weapons in really professional ways. And so that's one of the topics I want to cover as we get into the meat of the show is to get your thoughts on those things so people can hear your thought process.
It's a great topic to cover. And I think the right answer, like for most questions, is it depends.
Yep.
Right. And so we'll talk more about that.
Sounds good. But I want to kick us off with this topic that you suggested, which was to talk about innovating versus inventing and why too many founders want to build something from scratch versus just innovating on existing patterns that customers will recognize. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I love talking about it because like most mistakes I've made this mistake repeatedly myself. And when I talk to a lot of first-time founders, a lot of founders who are early, I see them most commonly making this mistake. I think it has to do with that there's no real constraints when it comes to building software. I mean, there are some, but for the most part, you can build something with very few constraints. And because of that, we like to kind of imagine ourselves as Edison or some other famous inventor in our lab, kind of inventing something that the world has never seen before. And the truth is that most of what we need to do is to innovate on patterns that already exist versus trying to invent an entirely new pattern that someone hasn't seen or an entirely new product that someone hasn't seen before. And we could talk more why I think that, but you know, one of the core things is that you're trying to solve a business problem. And if it is a problem today, most likely there is some pattern that already exists, even if it's manual or inefficient, and that's the pattern that you want to fix. What you don't want to do is invent something whole cloth that makes you feel brilliant and probably makes your customer feel dumb.
Right. Makes them feel confused. There's a really good example of this, actually. When we launched Drip, it was really early on just an email capture widget, kind of like you see AppSumo or SumoMe has now.
Sure.
But this was back before all those existed. And so we launched it as that, plus an autoresponder. And then we added some automation to it to be able to, marketing automation, very simple rules to move people in and out. And instead of just calling ourselves lightweight marketing automation, which is what we call ourselves now, I was looking for this some other term because I didn't want to group myself with the Infusionsofts and the HubSpots and the Marketos because I felt like that was too enterprise. And I was doing exactly this. We had built a product that really was an innovation on an existing pattern, but I felt like lumping myself in with those existing patterns wasn't a good positioning move. And in the end, that would have been a mistake. My competitors do that and they try to branch out and not be in a similar, I guess, in a similar space as their competitors. And it just seems to confuse people.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think we try to be too clever and we end up confusing people. And, you know, no one wants to feel like if you're an entrepreneur and you just built something and you're showing it to the world, like that it's similar to something else that's already out there. They want to kind of define an entirely new category or think about what they've done in an entirely new way. I used to think that way. And over the years, I learned to think more about, well, what I really want is to be in a market that is in some ways highly commoditized, right? And so there are lots of alternatives, lots of players, lots of solutions. And what I want to do is approach a market like that when I think there's a shift kind of happening that lets me resegment or redefine that market and not to try to invent a market whole cloth.
Right. An example of that is what you're doing with Drift, where
yes,
you offer in-app messaging and live chat inside SaaS apps. And there are obviously some other folks doing that right now. What got you here to the point where you are with Drift? What's the opportunity you see?
So I think about it in two ways. I think we're not the first to do chat. Companies have been doing chat for the last 15 years. There are public companies that do nothing more than, you know, support-based chat. We all have seen over the years. And there are companies that do it within a product or outside of a product or kind of in our world. So we're not the first. And that's exactly the point. We don't want to be the first. There is a large market here. And what we think has happened is that, one, the people have become used to or kind of expect that they can communicate to any person, any company, anything, anytime. And you see that in all of the messaging apps that we use on our phones, right? So whether that's Facebook Messenger or Telegram or Snapchat or any host of other messaging products that we all use day to day, that has become the default standard. Or in other countries, you know, with WeChat in China and all the various other chat systems around the world, that has become kind of the default expectation of the world. That is happening now, right? And that is something that is very different and looks and feels very different than the 15-year-old chat systems that many of us kind of were used to using or used to seeing around the web, right? So just a totally different expectation and, you know, millions if not billions of people kind of expecting this to be the norm. And so we thought, well, if this is the big shift that's happening kind of in our, on the consumer side of things, right, in our day-to-day life, right, we're all just people, whether it's B2B or B2C, we're all people at the end of the day. How are businesses going to respond to this when customers or their users want to engage with them on their website, inside their product, in their mobile app, inside their service? How are they going to do this? And so that's the big shift that we're trying to push towards. And then the other shift we saw was that the shift in the way that people buy products today, right? And so I think sales has changed a lot in my time in the last 15 plus years doing this, where before I compete, like I mentioned, we were mostly enterprise sales. You know, we had all the information. and we had all the power in the buying process. And so, you know, we could have enterprise salespeople, we can have collateral, we can have people meet with us and have phone calls and have meetings and all this stuff. That's not the way people buy today, right? Today, we can find out anything about any product or any service anywhere, right? On our phone, on our laptop, anywhere that we want, via voice, via, you know, any system out there. And so we think that sales and kind of the way that you sell to a customer and the way that you support an ongoing relationship with a customer has to change. And so you need to get back to almost the way that we've always done business, right? Before all of this, which is kind of one-to-one conversations that you're having with your customers and prospects.
And as someone who's basically launching his fifth company, I'm wondering, now that you're about a year into this mm-hmm. next effort, how different is Drift today than when you first conceived it?
That's a hard question to answer. I think at the very 50,000 foot level, it's not very different. At the 10,000 foot level, it's very different. We all know this, when you build something, and especially if you work the way that we've always worked, which is a very customer first or customer driven approach to building products and building companies, it changes a lot. And so we've learned a lot from our customers. We've incorporated a lot of feedback from the market and into our product. And so it definitely is going in the same direction. It's just kind of some happy discoveries along the way have led us to kind of maybe focus on some things that we wouldn't have focused on until later.
Got it. Yeah. And you know, you talk about your customer focused development. You were doing customer development, what people know today as customer development, long before I had ever heard the term, and I'm assuming before it was invented. Like, you were the first, it was with Performable, where you were doing an early access / private beta. I don't know what you called it, because I was part of that, and you were asking for tons of feedback and iterating on the product quickly, and I had never seen a web app do that. When was that? When did you launch Performable, or when was the beta?
2009.
Yeah, so it was quite a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago, and we, you know, it was kind of almost an accidental thing that we stumbled upon early at Performable, and that was, we kind of, as a small company, we wanted to get as much feedback as possible in kind of the development process. And so we kind of stumbled upon what now basically how everyone starts a company or everyone builds a product, or not everyone, I should say, most people that we would know would build a product this way, and kind of stumbled our way into it. And, you know, since 2009, it has been my religion, right? It is how we build everything, how we operate it later at HubSpot, how we operate from day to day at Drift, and just putting the customer at the center. And it kind of, in some ways, perfectly overlaps with the product that we're trying to build at Drift. In some ways, we're trying to make every company out there become customer driven.
Well, this is one of the reasons that I like having you on the show, and why I like following what you're doing, because there are certain folks in our space that are tastemakers. And what I mean by that is people who you watch, whether it's up close or from afar, and you see what they're up to, and you realize they're out ahead of the rest of us on this front. And you might look at Noah Kagan with growth hacking. You might look at Jason Cohen with certain aspects of growing WP Engine. He did some awesome validation stuff up front. You look at Etta Heaton Shaw and Neil Patel, what they're doing with Crazy Egg Kissmetrics and now QuickSprout. And you're doing that in terms of like product development and, like you said, like customer communication. And I even think freemium starts to creep in there when I think about you. Have you done freemium on previous apps, or is Drift your first?
We did freemium on Performable, and then we did it later at HubSpot when we launched our product called Sidekick, which was for salespeople. And so that was entirely kind of freemium-based model. And we kind of thought about it at HubSpot, and we do a Drift as kind of this PQL model, so product qualified lead model, which was very different than the way that we sold HubSpot's marketing product, which was totally based around this MQL process, so marketing qualified leads. And so for people that are wondering what that means, it means that for the marketing product and the MQL focus, it's the playbook that most people follow, which is for SaaS apps, which is to have lead forms, to capture email addresses, usually do that by gating content, so downloads or worksheets or what have you, and then basically put them in a nurturing process, and maybe in some businesses follow up with a salesperson. And so that's a traditional MQL process, whereas the PQL process is get them to use the app as soon as possible. And in our case, we did away with all lead forms, and, you know, we don't gate any content. We want our kind of content and our message to spread. What we're focused in on is the only form that we have is the form that asks you for email to get into our product.
And if folks want to hear more in-depth discussion about this topic, you have a new podcast out. You got about a dozen episodes, and it's called Seeking wisdom. And episode 11 is titled Why We Killed Our Lead Forms and Gated Content. So to be clear, I want to restate this to the listeners. If you go to drift.com, spelled just like it sounds, there's no content that's gated. There's no content upgrades on the blog. I know you used to have some, but all your lead forms, gated content is gone. You also now have a freemium model and you don't ask for credit card up front. So you have gone to the extreme in terms of removing friction for people to get into your app. It's literally an email address and a button click.
That's it. And so, yeah, the other controversial thing we did was, or for some, is to remove the credit card form. You know, we did that with Sidekick, but we had a credit card process back in Performable for sure.
Got it. And so tell me the logic behind removing all three of these things or the thought process. Is it to get as many people into the product as possible in order to, are you looking to get feedback to iterate quickly? Or is it that you're using the folks who are coming into the product at, that's kind of your lead nurturing starts there? Or how does that work?
Both, plus one other thing. So definitely we want to accelerate learning. And the way that we've built our company is around this customer-driven approach. And so the more customers and the more users we can have in the system, the more that we can accelerate our learning. And so that's one. The second is there is a nurturing flow that happens once you start to use the product, for sure. The third is that part of our product is an embeddable widget on your site that lets you do one-to-one and real-time chat or for you to send messages to people in-app. And so but we want to get as many people to install Drift as possible because that serves as marketing back to our product.
Got it. Yeah, you have the viral loop, right? It says we use Drift Messenger at the bottom.
Exactly.
That's perfect. And that's something to keep in mind. There are certain aspects of freemium that work really well. And one of them is having the viral, some type of visible viral loop, whether that's a thing at the bottom of every email that your app sends or a visual powered by link, which is essentially what you have.
And if we didn't have that part, we probably would have required credit card or maybe required one of those other kind of hurdles, but that is core to us spreading. And so I kind of look at it this way, like both for content and for our product, our job right now at Drift is to spread as wide as possible.
But spread via your product because you're
exactly.
not, you know, a lot of folks these days are doubling down, tripling down on content marketing. And I know you guys are doing some of that with the blog and the podcast, but it sounds like you're trying to make your product more of that wedge to get into the space.
Exactly. And so, we do content as just like other folks do. But I think one shift that we saw happening in the last couple of years is that the bar for content is escalating, right? The arms race for content is escalating fast. And so in the early days when HubSpot started focusing on the content marketing focus, there wasn't much competition, right? And there weren't too many people doing, especially in SaaS, B2B, doing content that many years ago, back in 2006, 2007, 2008. So there was a lower bar. And now there's been kind of an arms race to content. And so I think people listening need to think about how they use different angles to stand out. And I think there are some people still, including yourself, who can create amazing content, and you are always going to stand out for your content. For the rest of us, it's pretty hard to stand out on content, and so you need to lean on another strength.
In terms of the freemium and not asking for credit card up front, let's say there's a first-time SaaS entrepreneur who's bootstrapping an app and listening to this podcast. They don't have a big bucket of funding. They don't have the experience that we do launching multiple apps and growing them. Do you feel like they could pull freemium off? Or do you feel like it takes the experience that you've had doing startups for many years?
That's a tough one. I think it all depends. But I think, freemium, as you know and everyone else knows, it's a hard thing to pull off because and SaaS in general is pretty hard because it's a game of patience. And so as an early entrepreneur or first-time entrepreneur, especially if you're bootstrapping business, having that level of patience is pretty difficult. It's a lot easier to sell services or to sell kind of one-off kind of pieces of either content or learning or software and to get revenue faster than it is to get it through SaaS, right? Because back when we used to sell software kind of pre-SaaS or on the enterprise side, you'd sell it kind of on a license basis and you'd get all your money up front. And with the SaaS model, you're taking that and you're divvying that up over the lifetime of the customer. And so you're getting all of these tiny little payments, which becomes, as we all know now, a huge kind of cash drain on your business.
Right. And thus once any SaaS app starts to scale up, that becomes the point at which they want to raise a big bucket of funding.
Yeah, and what we did, and we're lucky to have done it, it's unusual. We raised a large bucket of money when we started.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And kind of buried it in the, you know, in the ground.
Sure. This is for Drift, right?
This is for Drift.
Yeah. And I'm assuming you did that just based on past reputation and past successes and stuff, right? I mean, your reputation probably alone.
Yes. I think that's the short answer. And I think, you know, also the people that we raised the money from outside of the HubSpot management team were all past investors in several companies that I've done.
Very cool. And I'm curious, you're talking about using your product as a marketing channel, and then you're doing content marketing with the blog and the Seeking Wisdom podcast. Are there any other marketing approaches that are working for you guys these days? And the reason I ask is because there are a lot of early stage founders listening, and they always like to hear what folks are doing in the first year or two of an app, because it's hard to get traction at that point. It's hard to build a brand, you know, and once you're 5 years in, things change. And so now that you're in this early stage, I'm curious what you guys are up to in terms of marketing, driving leads, that kind of stuff.
So the surprising kind of channels for us have been, and this changes every day. One has been kind of longer form content, non-gated longer form content. So we did a book for SaaS CEOs, kind of an ebook on that. And we did that last month. We did that with the folks over at Price Intelligently. And we just put it out there and to spread, no email required, nothing. And that was fantastic for us. So that was surprising. So we're doubling down on that. And we're about to release, we have two other books that we're working on right now that we'll be releasing. One with Help Scout and the other one just on our own. So that's been surprising. The other things that have been surprising is SlideShare. This is not new. This is, you know, SlideShare has been around for so long. But I was surprised having, you know, we did a lot of SlideShare stuff back at Performable, and then I kind of ignored it once they got acquired by LinkedIn. But like, amazing. We have several presentations that we've uploaded there that have over 40,000 views and continuously drive a lot of great people to our product. Really surprising that is remained as strong as it is. In some ways, it's way stronger than back when we used to use it at Performable. And then the third, probably not surprising to anyone, but has been for us in this B2B context, has been YouTube. Just early kind of investments there that we've only been doing for probably the last 2 months, and just amazing the amount of people that we get from YouTube and the number of views that we get on our, you know, B2B SaaS product. You know, you would think, who's watching YouTube videos on this?
Yeah, it's unexpected. And all three of those are non-gated, is that correct? Like the ebooks, you didn't ask for email, YouTube obviously not, and SlideShare, I know you can put settings, but I would guess at this point you're not.
All non-gated for us.
So it really is just driving some interest, building some brand recognition, and then click-throughs from those items. How fascinating.
Exactly. And the, you know, long-form content, which for us, we were at a point kind of early this year where we were releasing a blog post on our blog several times a week, and we slowed that down last month and are starting to put all our energy in kind of long-form, more evergreen content, and that has paid off really well for us. So I'm going to continue to double down there. So instead of several times or four times a week posting, we're posting maybe once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks, and really investing a lot in that post.
Nice. Yeah, we were actually doing something similar. We backed off on the frequency on the Drip blog, and we have published, like you guys, we published two pretty lengthy ebooks in the past 6 months, as well as an audiobook version of one of them, and a video course with Patrick McKenzie about email marketing. And we found that those kind of bigger hits, I don't know, they're the differentiator these days, I guess, because there's so much high quality content coming out of so many blogs.
Oh yeah, I think audio and video are like the two areas that we're betting a lot on, and which you're seeing as well. I was surprised by both. I was surprised by audio. You probably aren't, because you've been doing a podcast for a while now. Great podcast, and I'm here to learn as much as share. And then video, especially for our topic, right, which seems like so narrow and so geeky. Surprising how much interest there is and how much traction there is in video.
Yeah, indeed. And you see some people who've already hit that nail, like with Rand's, you know,
yes, for sure.
Fridays, who was doing that for a long time. Clay Collins did a lot of that in the early days with Lead Pages. I think there's some examples out there, but there isn't anyone who I can think of today offhand who's really nailing it in this space. So I think that leaves room for it.
I think one of the things in audio and video is that the entry bar is much higher, right? It's a lot easier to write a blog post or to have someone write a blog post. Really hard to do a consistent podcast, really hard to stand out on video. And so because of that, the bar is heavier and the noise is lower.
That's right. Yeah. That kind of brings us to your podcast, Seeking Wisdom. As I said, you're about a dozen episodes in. And tell me about what made you want to launch that. Was it to help market Drift? Was it because you haven't had a podcast before? Just explore the medium? What was the logic there?
It was more about exploring the medium. So definitely in the beginning, it was not to market Drift. And myself and Dave Gerhardt, who I do the show with, kind of did it. It was kind of our side project. It was not something we were thinking about for Drift. And I started to do it because core to what we do at Drift, or kind of our culture here, is really based around continuous learning. That's kind of selfish, right? That's been the thing that I've been chasing, you know, my entire career or my entire life, is this kind of obsession with continuously getting better and continuously learning, whether that's through mentors or books or experiences that I have. And so wanted to create a kind of a culture like that. And so everyone at Drift is almost the same in that way. And so Seeking Wisdom was really about sharing some either methods that I was using for learning or kind of books that I had been reading, and really had nothing to do with kind of the company that we were building, although that has evolved as our kind of listenership has grown. People want to know more about, not necessarily Drift the product, but Drift this stage of the business. And so we're going to start sharing more and more of that.
Oh, that'll be fun. Yeah, and I've listened to all the episodes, and so if folks are interested in adding another couple experienced founders to their podcast queue, I would recommend Seeking Wisdom podcast. Specifically, there's a couple episodes, if you want to go and check out a couple in the backlog. Episode 1 and episode 6 are, one is about how a modern product team should work, and 6 is about why I never hire product managers. And those are probably my two favorite. I've actually emailed those to some people on my team just to kind of, because we started noodling on, yeah, this is how we need to start thinking about it. So if you're interested in some back episodes of this, check that out, and then also subscribe, because I get the feeling there's going to be some good stuff coming out of you guys in the coming months.
Oh, yeah. So a lot of our future episodes are around exactly those two topic areas that you mentioned. And that's what people want to hear about, kind of how we think about building product teams. How do you build a customer-driven engineering team? Like, how do you get engineers in front of customers and kind of rethink how we build product? And so we're going to have a lot of that stuff. And I'm excited. That is the stuff that people are hungry for. And, you know, I'm actually flying out tomorrow to Minnesota to talk to the team at Lead Pages. Great company, about this very topic. And so they want to kind of think about this as they scale to, I think they're like 160 people now, to the next phase.
Awesome. That sounds exciting, man. Well, and if folks want to check out what you're up to with Drift, they can head over to drift.com. That's drift.com. And like we said, just if you can just enter an email address, you get access to the app and can check out what David's been up to and where they're headed.
Thank you, Rob, for having me. This has been awesome.
Absolutely.
Let's not make it 6 or 7 years like it's been.
Indeed. It's too long. Been too long. Anywhere else you'd like folks to catch up with you on Twitter or anything like that?
Twitter is probably the best for me. So I'm dcancel. That's dcancel. And you can find me there.
Sounds great. Thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Rob.
That wraps us up for the day. Thanks again to David Cancel for taking the time to come on the show. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.